Today is Wednesday, December the 1st, 2021. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key, and my colleague is Joe King. Do you know who has your personal data? Do you know how Facebook, Google, Amazon, and other big tech companies are using your personal data? Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.FM, that's the Progressive Radio Network, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.FM on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your question or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. "3G technology is phasing out. If you use an older phone, there's a good chance it won't work anymore starting in January. Older technology is being phased out, with the latest 5G technology becoming more readily available across the country. For people with 3G mobile phones, that means an end to their connections. If you still have mobile phones that exclusively connects to 2G networks, it probably hasn't worked in a while. That scenario is now creeping up on users who have old mobile phones that use 3G technology. The 3G technology is now 20 years old, and companies are looking to phase it out in favor of better, faster connections. AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile have detailed their plans to shut down the 3G network next year. The move will free up resources for the current 5G and LTE technology. You will need to upgrade your device to something that supports 5G soon. Otherwise, you won't be able to make or receive calls or text messages. And the only way to connect to the Internet will be through Wi-Fi. Here's when each mobile company will phase out 3G. AT&T will complete the 3G shutdown by February 2022. Verizon is aiming to have its 3G network down by December 2022, and devices that will stop working include Apple iPhone 5, 5C, 5S or earlier, Samsung Galaxy S4 or earlier, 3G basic phones and smartphones, 3G Home Phone Connect, and Apple iPad 2 and earlier. T-Mobile will end Sprint's 3G CDMA network January 1st next year and Sprint's LTE network by June 30th next year. T-Mobile's 3G networks will be retired by July 1 of next year. The FCC cautioned that you might still be affected even if your mobile operator isn't listed. It added that networks like Cricket, Boost, and Straight Talk use the network from the three main providers. It's also said that these are the estimated retirement dates for 3G, but some areas could lose connectivity sooner. The best option would be to upgrade your device to something compatible with the current 5G network. Your service provider should have plans in place to accommodate the switchover, and some may be offering discounted or free upgrades to help your pocketbook. When shopping for a new device, most phones released within the last year would be 5G capable. If you're an Apple fan, iPhone 12 or later models are compatible with 5G technology. The Wall Street Journal reported that cell phone carriers AT&T and Verizon proposed limits on their 5G networks for the first half of 2022 in an effort to launch their services while also addressing regulatory concerns about potentially disrupting air traffic safety. The journal, which obtained a copy of that letter that both carriers sent to the Federal Communications Commission, reported that the companies proposed to reduce or cap the strength of its 5G services across the country, especially near helipads and airports. The Federal Aviation and Administration said in a statement, "This is an important and encouraging step, and we are committed to continued constructive dialogue with all of the stakeholders. We look forward to reviewing the AT&T and Verizon proposal." The FAA believes that aviation and 5G C-band wireless service can safely coexist. The proposal represented one of the most comprehensive efforts in the world to safeguard aviation technologies. The crux of the issue is how frequencies from 5G may affect a system used to calculate distance between the ground and the aircraft, which is measured by radar altimeters. some radar altimeters may be sensitive and able to pick up the transmissions of 5G, though cell phone carriers contend those 5G transmissions are lower than those picked up by altimeters. The cell phone carrier proposed the limits as a way to give the government time to look into the issue. Although the carrier said the limits would not have a significant impact on the speed of services they provide to the customers, the journal noted that the proposal is significant because the companies have spent billions on the 5G spectrum licenses. Firefox dedicated password manager app is shutting down. Firefox Lockwise, Mozilla's dedicated password manager app, is shutting down in December. After Mozilla added autofill support to its browsers last month, Mozilla introduced Firefox Lockwise to Android way back in 2019 as a password manager. It made it easy to bring your saved account information to any app on your phone without relying on your browser, with a recent update to Firefox transforming it into an autofill service. Lockwise is no longer needed, and a shutdown date is now planned on December the 13th this year, leaving users just a couple of weeks to make sure they're updated or installed Firefox on their phones. Version 4.0.3 is the last version coming to the Play Store, so any bugs or missing features will remain unfixed from here on out. While the app will continue to work for users who have it installed, it's getting delisted from the Play Store. If you've been using Lockwise to log into your library of apps, there's no need to stress about losing access. Instead, just make sure you're running Firefox 93 or higher on your phone. Mozilla's October update to its browser brought full autofill support to Android, though it still doesn't use Android 11's keyboard's UI. You'll have to make do with the old-school drop-down method, though it does use biometrics for authentication. Lockwise will remain on the Play Store till December 13th, and make sure that you're running the latest version of Firefox. DuckDuckGo tool to prevent apps from tracking Android users. The tool will be built into the DuckDuckGo app on Android. DuckDuckGo's new tool aimed to prevent apps from tracking Android users. The tool, called App Tracking Protection, hopes to offer more protection from third-party trackers than Apple's App Tracking Transparency feature, which gives users the choice to opt out of data tracking within apps. However, DuckDuckGo's tool hasn't been rolled out as a part of an update to all Android phones, nor is it available as a separate download. It's built into DuckDuckGo's privacy-focused browser app, but works across your device in its post on its blog. The company says that the tool will block trackers it identifies in other apps from third-party companies. Once app tracking protection is enabled, it will run in the background as you use your phone. The tool recognizes when an app is about to send data to a third-party tracker and will then prevent the app from taking your information. DuckDuckGo says that it's continually working to identify and protect against new trackers, which means that your data should be kept away from any new trackers that crop up. From DuckDuckGo app, you should also be able to see a real-time view of trackers that the tool has blocked, along with where your data would have been going. The company says that although the App Tracking Protection tool isn't a virtual private network, meaning VPN, your device will behave as if is one. This is because App Tracking Protection uses a local VPN connection, which means that it works its magic right on your smartphone, as DuckDuckGo explains in its post. However, App Tracking Protection is different from VPNs because it never routes app data through an external server. While conducting its own test, DuckDuckGo found that more than 96% of some of the most popular free Android apps have third-party trackers that most users are unaware of. The company also discovered that 87% of these apps send user data to Google, while 68% send data to Facebook. Right now, the tool is in beta, but you can join the private wait list and you won't have to enter any personal information to do so. To sign up, download DuckDuckGo from the Google Play Store and open the app. Hit Settings, followed by App Tracking Protection in the Privacy section. From there, choose Join the Private Waitlist. DuckDuckGo says it's gradually introducing the feature to more people every week. DuckDuckGo obviously doesn't have the power to change the internal configuration of Android devices like Google does, which means that DuckDuckGo tool can't provide the same app tracking permission prompts that appears on Android and iOS. But if you combine the app tracking protection tool and the privacy settings already in the Android devices, you can help protect your data from third-party trackers and apps themselves. Like Apple, Google recently started making it more difficult for apps to collect data on users by restricting them from accessing users' advertising IDs after they've opted out of tracking. Apple's stringent app tracking transparency tools essentially uproot the advertising system on iPhones, reportedly costing social platforms $10 billion as a result. But Apple's privacy system is limited, as it only blocks access to users' identifier for advertisers. That's the IDFA. DuckDuckGo only restricts direct access to a user's IDFA. The rest is essentially an honor system where Apple is asking developers to respect user choice not to track, but isn't actually blocking any third-party trackers itself. App tracking protection blocks those third-party trackers directly, making the tool more powerful than what's available on iOS. DuckDuckGo's tool can help provide more protection from third-party trackers when compared to Apple's app tracking transparency tools and Android's privacy settings alone. Give DuckDuckGo a try. This may solve some of your problems. What did Einstein say about doing the same thing? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Well, here's a different twist on it. Doing the same thing and having the European Union slap you on the wrist, but you keep trying because you may get a different result. Rather than having a single default browser setting as you do in Windows 10, Windows 11 has individual link associations for HTTP, HTTPS, and HTML files. They naturally default to Edge, and you have to individually set them to a different browser if you want to use something like Chrome or Firefox. But that's not the worst of it. If you use any sort of Microsoft widget on Windows 11, such as the weather app, you'll be forced to use Edge whenever you click a link that opens the browser. That's because the file association for widgets is permanently set to Edge. Microsoft got in trouble for making Edge too hard to bypass back in 2009 when the European Union ruled Microsoft was using its market dominance to push its browser. This forced a default browser setting in the first place and is why Windows 10 lets you use Firefox or Chrome or whatever you want. Given that Microsoft is just repeating the same mistake it made in 2009, one can guess it's just a matter of time before the European Union slaps Microsoft wrist again and we go back to using whatever browser we want. In the meantime, Windows 11 is slowly rolling out to the rest of the world, but with this news, I'm in no rush. Gee, what did Einstein say about doing the same thing? There's a rule called Einstein insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Well, Microsoft is trying to get you to use something different, and they keep trying. There are a couple of givens in this current crisis with semiconductor chips. The first is there's a shortage. The second is to increase the capacity of the foundries, it will cost at least $17 billion with a capital B. And you have a number of foundries that needs to expand, And you're talking about a lot of billion dollars that's needed. So it's not surprising why semiconductor chips will be getting more expensive. Semiconductor foundries are asking and getting prepayments in order to build out foundry capacities. Large fabless chip designers made advanced payments to retain capacity. Long-term supply agreements are nothing new in the semiconductor industry. Both fabless chip designers and contract makers of chips prefer stable supply and demand, respectively. But in a world with severely constrained supply, chip developers are willing to pay for their integrated circuits well in advance, which is a boon for foundries. Taiwan Semiconductor, the world's largest foundry, disclosed in a filing that it received temporary receipts of around $3.9 billion from customers as of September 30th this year. Temporary receipts from Taiwan Semiconductor customers are payments received to retain its capacity. To put the number into context, Taiwan Semiconductor earned some $14.9 billion in the third quarter of this year, so $3.9 billion is a sizable sum for the company. These advance payments are made under agreements with specific terms and conditions. As a result, Taiwan Semiconductor does not immediately recognize these payments as revenue, whereas its clientele does not recognize them as current inventory. Meanwhile, when the terms and conditions set forth in the agreements are subsequently satisfied, the treatment of temporary receipts will be determined by mutual consent. Taiwan Semiconductor did not disclose its customers willing to pay in advance, but big companies like AMD and NVIDIA are the likely suspects. In a statement by NVIDIA, "We have placed non-cancelable inventory orders for certain products in advance of our normal lead times, paid premiums, and provided deposits to secure normal and incremental future supply and capacity, and may need to continue to do so in the future." As of August the 1st, NVIDIA had $195 million in prepaid expenses, up from $142 million in January of this year. NVIDIA does not disclose whether it made advance payments to Taiwan Semiconductor or Samsung Foundry, but all contract makers of semiconductors are likely accepting such payments these days. AMD also made substantial prepayments in its long-term supply agreements. As of September this year, its prepayment totaled $355 million, up from $299 million a year before. AMD has supply agreements with Taiwan Semiconductor and Global Foundries. Qualcomm does not disclose how much it pays for chips in advance, yet the company recently confirmed that it entered into several and expected to enter into additional multi-year capacity purchase commitments with certain suppliers for their ICs in a bid to secure commitments for future supply. With a doubt, the semiconductor industry is now in a very challenging position, with chip designers desperate to pay in advance for capacity. Likewise, foundries are willing to pay in advance for manufacturing tools. In this situation, it's not surprising why chips are and will be getting more expensive. For industries that are not prepaying, they are queued up in the back of the line. For the next year or two, products dependent on semiconductor chips will be more expensive. So the big guys, by prepaying, are ensuring that they're getting supply. But for the little guys, they have to wait in line, and it's going to be a long time before they get their chips. Our typical advice has been buy what you need today and not for tomorrow, because when you need it tomorrow, it will be cheaper and probably with better performance. But with the semiconductor shortages and the expected increased cost in semiconductor chips, it may be wise to get the extra memory today. This is especially true in a computer system, as many will have the memory soldered on, making upgrade of memory impossible. The truck industry is indispensable when it comes to keeping stores stocked and the flow of goods moving. Truckers move more than 70% of the nation's freight every year. Right now, they're facing a major shortage, and regular Americans are feeling the impact. Truck drivers struggle to deliver food and cleaning supplies during the coronavirus pandemic. Back at the beginning of the pandemic, truckers were describing the challenges last year, which have been rough for a lot of reasons. Most recently, it's a strain on the supply chain affecting the truckers. The drivers are waiting for hours at a port, and many have a 14-hour day. If you're at the port and you are spending 6 hours waiting for a chassis, you only have so many driving hours left, and you're not going to make a deadline if you had one. A driver said he had recently had to wait 22 hours for a poultry pickup. There weren't any kind of facilities for a restroom there, and so he just sat there waiting for 22 hours. His only option for relief in that whole time were bottles. These are the sorts of problems truckers have always run into, to some extent. But the federal vaccine mandate has created a new one. A lot of truck drivers are not vaccinated, and a lot of the big grocery stores, packaging plants, won't let unvaccinated drivers go in there. There's also growing concern about an administration policy set to go into effect in January that will require anyone crossing land borders into the United States, including truckers who have carried goods into Canada or Mexico, are on their way back to be vaccinated. Meanwhile, according to the American Truck Association, the industry cannot afford to lose drivers. It's currently short about 80,000 drivers, and without action, that number is expected to double by 2030, meaning nearly 1 million new drivers will be needed to be hired and trained to keep pace with the increasing consumer demand. But finding a new driver is only half the battle. The trouble is keeping them. If you look at the large employers of truck drivers, the annual rate of turnover is 90%. That's astounding. That means that only 10% stay on the job and the other 90% just quit. That tells us there's something deeper going on than any short-term fix is going to address. Driver says something's got to give. You can put all the bonuses out there that you want, but if you don't have a certain mindset of a driver out there to do it, it's useless. The economy dies when truck stops running. In addition to all these industry pressures, drivers continue to cite a number one problem that affects them doing their job day to day: disrespectful and dangerous drivers on the road. The truckers say they're out there trying not to kill people, and drivers are swerving in and out of them doesn't help with their stress. They ask everyone to give them a break and give them some room to do their job on the road. Presenting Benjamin Rockwell with the IT Pro Series. Use of Offsite Data Storage.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we start talking about computers, technology, and the workplace. And sometimes some of the things that we deal with in the workplace, they have implications outside of the office. In this case, there are some minor implications outside of the office, but let's dive in. And that is offsite data storage. Now, you're familiar with this if you use something like Dropbox or OneDrive, but you may not have all of the intricate details of what's going on, how it's being stored, and many more things like that. In this case, I do want to start off with talking about the business side of this. Years ago, I worked for a company, and they had their data center located in the Los Angeles metro area. Now, their backup facility was located in Salt Lake City, Utah. So we're talking a number of miles away. It was specifically located far enough away so that if there were the big earthquake, which is, I will tell you, California has been expecting a big earthquake for, well, since the big, huge earthquake in San Francisco in 1905. But, we've always been expecting one, and it never really came. And they always said, yes, it's more likely to happen this year than any year before. Yeah, and then the next year, it's more likely. Yeah, okay, go on. So the idea of storing your data off-site is to protect you from a number of different issues that could happen. For instance, yes, the big earthquake, but there are also hurricanes, like the hurricane that hit New York and New Jersey a few years back, or we start talking about the hurricane that hit, Katrina that hit New Orleans. If your business is in one of those locations, then your data should be many miles away. And different areas of the country and different industries dictate different requirements. As a general rule, what you want is someplace that is roughly, as a general rule, 500 miles away. You might go with 800 miles away. You might go with 1,000 miles away. If you're on the West Coast, you may say, let's get somebody on the East Coast. If you're on the East Coast, the West Coast. It doesn't matter. It's just a matter of your data is not at ground zero. What does that protect you against? Well, another company that I worked for, we had our data backups were located. I think I was in Los Angeles area, and I think we located the data backups in Reno, Nevada. And that was far enough from all of our different locations, so we had one common location to store all of the data, and it was close enough to a major center so we could drop in if we needed to get some of the data, but it was far enough away so that it wouldn't affect anything. What would happen if the company that I worked for, the office that I worked for, It was a sub company, if you will. If it were to burn to the ground, well, we have all of the data offsite on a daily basis, and that data included all of the accounts receivable, all of the accounts payable, all of the insurance information, all of the different things that we needed in case we needed to get back up and running, but also to collect on the monies owed. So there was a lot of value in that. Sure, the company never burned down. The company never had a problem with the data and having everything go topsy-turvy, but it's still a good idea. And we can apply this in a number of different directions. One of the things that I tell people on a regular basis, you've got a external hard drive. You're backing up your system, especially the important files, the important pictures and videos and data from all kinds of different events and all kinds of different things you've done throughout your life. Your life is on that external hard drive. Where's another copy of that hard drive? Well, that's actually kind of simple. You give a copy of that hard drive over to Aunt Susie, or to grandma, or mom, or dad, or whoever, at Thanksgiving, whoever lives outside of the state. And we're talking preferably a couple of states away. So, yes, everybody gathers, in New England, and you live in New Orleans. Everybody gathers in New England every Thanksgiving, or you gather at different family gatherings and you hand over the external hard drive and you kind of swap the external hard drives out, or maybe have multiple hard drives. And this is cheap insurance to keep all of this data many, many miles away, many miles away. Yes, some people do go with the idea of storing just that external hard drive in a bank vault, the safety deposit boxes. But I'll tell you, I haven't been inside of a bank in 2 years, I think. Are you going to remember to take your external hard drive into the bank? You're more likely to remember to give it to Aunt Susie. That's my approach to it. You may have a different approach to it, but the whole idea here is get your data in a safe location that is far away from the original location. Whether we're talking business or we're talking personal, it's all the same idea, and it's all just a nice level increase in the security of your data. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. The Friday after Thanksgiving, has been known as the unofficial start to the holiday shopping season since the first modern Thanksgiving Day parade in 1924. The term Black Friday, however, did not arise until the 1960s when police officers in Philadelphia complained about the traffic and congestion caused by holiday shoppers. Retailers, however, did not appreciate the negative connotation associated with the name Black Friday, so they changed the meaning of the name to reflect the financial successes of that day. Traditionally, accountants used red ink to show negative amounts and black ink to show positive amounts, so retailers used this habit to rebrand Black Friday. The new meaning behind the name is that Black Friday is the day when retailers finally begin to turn a profit for the year. This year, Christmas is at risk as the supply chain disaster only gets worse. Global trade is a mess, and peak shipping has just begun. Early in the year, the hope was that the bottlenecks that messed up the global supply chain in 2020 would be mostly cleared up by now. They actually only gotten worse, much worse, and evidence is mounting that the holiday season is at risk. COVID outbreaks have idled port terminals. There still aren't enough cargo containers, causing prices to spike tenfold from a year ago. Labor shortages have stalled trucking and pushed U.S. job openings to all-time highs. And that was before UPS, Walmart, and other embarked on hiring hundreds of thousands of seasonal workers to take on the peak of peak. Everything that can go wrong is going wrong at the same time. Container ships are anchored by the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles. Now comes the rush of goods into the United States, which will only exacerbate all of this. It's going to be some holiday season. Preliminary initial data for this year's Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales showed 43% growth in-store sales, as well as 10.6% in online sales. Much of that rise in sales, though, is a result of price increases. The increase in prices will be too much for some consumers, and they will no longer demand the product. Given this situation, consumers won't be able to buy as much of a good as they would like. Behind the scenes, retailers have resorted to buying goods made a couple of years ago to make sure they at least secure some inventory. In normal times, these items would be liquidated at closeout stores or in foreign markets, but not now. Retailers are having a real hard time filling their shelves. There is no shortage of demand, with parents loading up on gifts as the pandemic drags on. But a dearth of cargo containers has left thousands of products waiting to be unloaded. The problem for manufacturers is they don't know if they'll get the last 4 months of the year shipped and delivered. The supply chain is a disaster, and it's only getting worse. Many companies are having trouble simply getting goods off cargo ships in the port of Los Angeles. There will be a shortage of toys this year, and it's going to be a tough year for retailers. Inventories at U.S. retailers are way below historical levels. Some of the largest retailers have already initiated early start of holiday specials and not wait for Black Friday. Target kicked off early Black Friday deals with a series of week-long sales starting right after Halloween. The sale started October the 31st and will continue throughout the holiday season. Other retailers, including Walmart, Macy's, Lowe's, and Best Buy's have shared how they will handle sales at a time when they're trying to spread out demand and reduce crowds. Kohl's also shared some of its holiday plans. Target kicked off Black Friday and Halloween. Target officially started the Black Friday discount promotion on October the 31st. Could supply chain issue affect holiday shopping? Halloween is now the new Black Friday. Macy's started its Black Friday deals special on November the 3rd, and it ran all the way through November the 27th. HP released its 29-page Black Friday ad on November the 5th, just a couple days later than the previous year's November the 2nd release. While some supply chain issues are resolving, some wish list entries will remain hard to come by this holiday season, like PlayStation 5. The supply chain may not be the Grinch that steals Christmas, after all. Despite concerns of shortages, major retailers such as Walmart and Target say they're well-stocked for the holidays, and consumers are definitely finding things to buy, but your gift list isn't in the clear just yet. Employers are still struggling to find workers. Microchip production is still struggling to meet demand. And good luck buying a PlayStation 5 for retail or finding good prices on laptops and TVs. Here's an overview of electronic products and categories that have been impacted by the supply chain and where things stand with them right now. The supply chain story here is not of empty shelves. It's of scarce parts and microchips leading to higher prices or a shortage of deals, if you will. TV prices are at their highest level since at least 2012, and that holiday shoppers should expect to spend at least $100 above normal on a set. Looking to buy PS5 and Xbox gaming consoles? Finding one at near list price will be a matter of determination and luck. The more frequently you check stock with retailers online and in the stores, the more likely you are to catch one of the holiday sales' sporadic restocks. If you're intent on scoring one of these as soon as possible, then sure, there's always eBay, where the PS5 and Xbox consoles are going for about $1,000 each, a 100% markup from their respective $500 list prices. Hot ticket electronic toys are making itself scarce on holiday shelves. This year, we've gotten out of stock messages. 2021 has the added complication the supply chain may struggle to reach stores and warehouses this holiday season. In this holiday season forecast, entry-level consumer electronics like laptops or, more precisely, budget laptops may be harder to come by. Sure enough, a recent report on holiday tech inventory by the New York Times noted that consumers should expect fewer laptops and fewer deals on machines in the sub-$400 price range. As reported in September, the great chip shortage forced Apple to cut production on its iPhone 13 series through the end of the year. Fortunately for Apple fans, 90 million iPhones minus 10%, which is the anticipated production cut, is still a lot. The new iPhone 13 and iPhone 13 mini were available directly via Apple, albeit at the device's pricey list prices of $799 and up and $699 and up, respectively. Artificial Christmas trees have long been susceptible to the whims of the supply chain. This year, there's a concern regarding the artificial tree stock. Prices on the typically imported product could be up by as much as 25% over 2020. The twinkly strings of Christmas lights in order to decorate all the trees were again expected to be in short supply. Christmas lights are largely produced and imported from countries in Asia, so yes, supply chain issues. When the pandemic knocked the global economy down in early 2020, factories slowed output or closed. Turns out that was the easy part. Restarting has been much more difficult. The supply chain has been choked by so many events, such as the Suez Canal blockage, and market dynamics like labor shortages and the spike in transportation costs. The supply chain has never had the opportunity to get back to normal. One of the better scenarios for the fourth quarter is that big retailers drastically increase spending on logistics, including resorting to using more expensive air freight or chartering entire cargo ships, but still maintain their sale targets. That will likely mean that they'll see a hit to the profit margins, but it also can lead to taking market share from smaller competitors who can't match their deep pockets. Consumers lose because their options are limited. Supply chain issues are getting continually worse. For the rest of the year, the key success factor will be the ability to supply product on time or relatively on time. The bigger, more systemic risk, one that could hurt every retailer, is that Americans spend less than expected because there isn't enough inventory. The available goods may also not be all that enticing. The boom in shipping prices has forced manufacturers to make hard decisions about what to transport. It is predicted that shoppers just won't have as good of a selection. Shipping big items and goods with lower value don't make as much economic sense right now. iPhones are small and pricey, making them an ideal good to ship or air freight amid spiking transport costs. But the same case can be made for low-end larger items. Surging costs for materials and transportation made an item more expensive than a retailer was willing to pay. Consumers lose because their options are limited, and it's not a normal time in the business world. There is no stability. Rising costs in the supply chain and labor are also likely to boost what consumers pay, which could dampen spending. Or it might cause a bigger shift from hard goods to experiences and services, a trend already in place this year as Americans get back to traveling and eating out. The industry also expects much fewer promotions than usual because inventories are tight, which will also turn off bargain hunters. Add that consumer expectations are sky high thanks to the ease and speed of e-commerce, and the retail industry is primed to severely disappoint the masses. If last year's holiday season was dubbed Shipageddon, then what would this year be called? It's easy to see a boom in gift cards out of frustration as Americans tire of out-of-stock products and logistic mishaps. There is a certain amount of underappreciation of the risk to the retailers. Supply chain affects everybody. Meeting customer expectation in an environment where everything is up in the air is nearly impossible. But the retail industry has seen this coming. Large firms with financial resources have been storing goods in their own warehouses or renting space to make sure they can start filling shelves over the next few weeks. It's another example of how scale will be the pivotal differentiator this holiday season. There's also a push to get Americans to shop sooner for the holidays. Retailers had traditionally saved big promotions for the week before Christmas to drive a late spending push. Consumers might see only news about port backups, but that won't hit home until they try to buy the toy of the year and can't get it. Then that's when it's crisis mode. Most retailers are already there. Presenting Technology Chatter of Hits and Misses with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston. Miscellaneous products.
Marty Winston joins me now. Marty, what do you have for us this week?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Mm-hmm. Let us start with this refrigerant leak detector from Klein Tools.
Okay.
And there's a news hook here for all you guys who won't want to hear it. They've changed the standard on refrigerant in air conditioning again.
So within the next
year or 2 years, everybody's going to have to probably change compressors and everything else. Somehow, these new rules make a lot of money for the HVAC industry.
So, we used to use Freon, and then we went to, I can't remember what it was, like R45 or something weird like that. It was R something.
Now, you're just showing off your nerd.
Was I right? Was it R45?
No. Normal people don't remember that stuff.
Okay.
Normal people barely remember HVAC. It's just the air conditioner guy.
So what is the new one? Do we know what the new? We must know what the new refrigerant is.
They know. I don't know. I just know it's going to need a new one. I just got this house in 2019, and already it's. I'm sorry, you may have to move out. You know, it's
wow.
No, it's not that bad.
But so does that detect the new refrigerant or just the previous ones?
I think this pretty much detects all of them. It goes from 100 to 3,000 parts per million.
Okay.
It's got a sniffer on a gooseneck and a control panel up front. It's, you know, it's like anything else from Klein. It's handy. It works. It's reliable. Speaking of checking things out, this is a Klein inspection kit that has both a remote read infrared thermometer mm-hmm. and an outlet analyzer.
That's interesting. They've combined two different items that are very handy, but normally I would see those separately. But it's good.
Meanwhile, for those of us who are running Ethernet cable, the Klein Landscout Junior cable tester.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And You and I have both used things like this to find out where the problem is.
I have been using those for far too long.
Indeed. And this electrical test kit, which has both a voltage sniffer and another one of those little outlet wiring analyzers.
Okay. So a good electrical test kit. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty good. How much time do we have? I got three more clients here.
I've got about 3.5 minutes here.
Oh, we'll make that work. Now, if anybody's ever put in sewer pipe, you know that if it doesn't have a certain pitch to it, it can go the wrong direction.
Yeah. And that could lead to some stink in the house or worse, yes.
The Klein digital level with programmable angles makes the whole thing push button direct, easy, and it's got a grooved magnet on it and comes with a carry case.
Nice. Very nice. You know, that is – that programmable angle, I like that idea. That's I'm not from that industry. I have no idea what they go through to do that, but
well, you have other things you put in. If you're putting in a rail on a stairway, you want to make sure that angle is the same.
Sure, yeah. As a matter of fact, we just put in a rail. We replaced out – somebody put a rail – our stairs go at whatever angle, and the rail was at a completely different angle. And it was
good heavens.
Yeah.
So you made an amusement park ride out of it.
It was interesting going downstairs. So, yeah, we did go through and put in – but we did it the old-fashioned way. We – measured at the top, measured at the bottom, measured at the top again, measured at the bottom again, and still managed to get it wrong.
Rubber ruler, huh?
Yeah, rubber ruler.
I have two more things for wiring, but I have a hunch we might want to wait for another segment.
Okay.
Is that right?
We've got about 2 minutes left.
2 minutes. Well, let's hit it. This is a Klein magnetic wire puller. And by putting the magnet on your side of the wall and the little magnetic dangle on the other side of the wall, you can bring the end of the wire to exactly where your hole is.
I have fished so many wires through so many walls, it's not even funny. That is something that I think I've seen something like that once a few years ago after I got out of the fishing business. But this from Klein Tools, that's got to be great. That is so much of a need.
And now, I love when things go really brute strength. I'm showing you the Klein Iron Workers pliers, and I can't get them all into the camera in one shot. These are beefy things. I mean, they could handle a nerd's toenails. That's how rugged and
my toenails might give those a run for their money.
They definitely would if mine went first. And I'm going to show you one more non-Klein thing, maybe two, from Newer Tech, a USB-C to HDMI adapter. Mm-hmm. That has nothing to do with construction, but if you're taking a video of it, it might be a handy way to deal with it.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I have one more here somewhere, but who knows? It may have to wait.
Can't see it. Can't find it. Oh, dear me.
You know, next time, I think we ought to talk about my grill.
Your grill? Oh, definitely. Yeah, let's definitely factor that in. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell, and that's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Thank you, Ben, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements of computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. The 46th Annual Trenton Computer Festival, TCF 2022, is set for Saturday, March the 19th, the next year, 2022. The theme of the festival is Disrupting Climate Change with Technology. It will be held at the College of New Jersey in Trenton, New Jersey. The keynote speaker is Bob Kopp, and he is the co-director of the University Office of Climate Action. He is a climate and sea level scientist and climate policy scholar at Rutgers University's Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences and Rutgers Institute of Earth and Ocean and Atmospheric Sciences. TCF will be a full day of learning and fun. For more information, you can go to tcf-nj.org. Westchester PC Users Group meets Thursday, December the 2nd. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Topic of presentation is holiday gifting. It will be an online virtual meeting via Zoom, and their website is wpcug.org. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, December the 3rd. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Their website is acgnj.org. The New York Amateur Computer Club meets Thursday, December the 9th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Topic of presentation is Lightning Talks. Online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is nyacc.org. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, December the 9th. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m., and this meeting is not the normal meeting time as it was rescheduled to avoid end-of-year holidays. Online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is bcug.com. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, December the 10th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and their website is limac.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.fm on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. With supply shortages, what is readily available as a suggestion for a practical computer-related gift is an external hard disk drive for backup. A new 1 terabyte hard disk unit can be purchased for under $40. For backup purposes, you don't need a solid-state drive. If there is an issue with budget, there are many hard disk drives available that were replaced with solid-state drives. You may have such a drive, or you may know of others that have a hard disk drive just gathering dust. An inexpensive external disk drive enclosure sells for $10 to $15. Be part of that 14% of computer users that are smart because they back up. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King, Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.